This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Rami Makhlouf.
You don't want to overreact. You know, you want to keep perspective.
Nah, screw that. Hit the music, Robbie. Hit the music. Let's go.
Let's go. Fit the man for a gold jacket.
For those who don't like our people, that's tough. We like them.
Live and local on 670 The Score.
Go Bears.
That is me with you for the next 3 hours here on 670 The Score and live from the Hyundai Score Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. I got Tyler Buterbaugh on the other side of the glass in a jam-packed show that we have put together for you this afternoon, including some Bears talk, a little more reasonable, rational Bears talk than what you heard just there. Coming up a little later in the show, also Sam Monson, the NFL analyst for the 33rd team. He'll join us to talk some Bears and some draft coming up at 6:20. Sammy P, host for Bet Sweats on the BetMGM Network. He'll be here to talk some NCAA tournament at 7 o'clock. And I always, always, always have phone lines and text lines open for you at 312-644-6767, including right now. If you want to get in before Sam, who joins me at 6:20, the phone lines are open to you at 312-644-6767. If you shoot me a text, I'll be getting to those throughout the show. And I wanted to start off tonight's show talking about something and saying something that, quite frankly, I did not think there was a chance in hell I'd be starting off a show talking about and saying about in any world, in any possibility at all. And that is the Chicago Bulls. And if you've heard me talk about the Chicago Bulls throughout the season, you know that I mostly have expressed, oh, I don't know, let's name off some bad emotions and thoughts. Anger, disappointment, apathy, cynicism. A big bag of that. You know what
Story
I mean?
Story of my life.
Exactly, yes. Thank you, Chuck. Except when I'm talking to Chuck Swirsky, because that man is a whirlwind of positivity and optimism. And when I talk Bulls with him, I can't help but get caught up in that whirlwind of positivity and optimism. So other than when I'm talking Bulls with Chuck Swirsky, it's been all those bad adjectives in terms of describing my thoughts and my emotions when it comes to this Bulls team. But I'm wondering if you, like me, find yourself unexpectedly liking this Bulls team. 312-644-6767. And look, we all always root for the Bulls. We want them to be great. Like, even when we want them to be bad, it's because we want them to be great. I don't hate the Bulls. I'm a Bulls fan. I grew up in the 90s in Chicago watching Michael Jordan and those Bulls teams. And so I have memories of glory and greatness. And the Bulls, especially for the last, I don't know, 10 years or so, have been far from that and seem to not really be getting any closer to that. So for the longest time, I, and I think a lot of you out there, have kind of just wanted this team to lose, to tank, and to get a number one pick and a transcendent type of player. And maybe that's still what you want in the future, and we will talk about that in the 8 o'clock hour of the show in terms of your long-term view on the Chicago Bulls based on this little stretch. But I just wanted to focus on this team right now, this 2024-25 Bulls team post-Zach LaVine trade and what we've seen out of them. And not only are they winning, this is what I mean when I – because if you told me before the Zach LaVine trade, they're going to trade Zach LaVine – and they're going to get hot in March. And I'd be like, okay, cool. They're going to get hot in March. All right. What does that do for me exactly? I wouldn't think, if you told me back then, before the Zach LaVine trade, I wouldn't think I would be moved or interested or enjoying a Bulls team that got hot in March. I'd probably be upset if you told me that. Like, they're still doing this? They're still winning basketball games and moving further away from any chance at a top three or four pick in the NBA draft, or maybe the number one pick in the NBA draft. Are we still doing this? But man, I can't help. I cannot help. It's like, maybe there's somebody who you thought you disliked for the longest time, and then all of a sudden you turn around and you're like, oh my God, I got a crush on them. How'd this happen? What happened? How did this even happen? That's how I feel about the Chicago Bulls and this Bulls team right now. Winners of 8 of their last 10, just closed a 6-game Western Conference road trip with a 4-2 record. And it's not just the wins, it's the way that they're winning. And by that, I mean running up and down the court, running and gunning, and scoring a whole bunch of points, which is a fun brand of basketball to watch. They have the 9th best offense in the NBA. And specifically, there's a few guys on this team that you watch and who play individually and collectively a style of basketball that's fun and exciting to watch, and they're winning basketball games. And it all starts, obviously, with Kobe White. 10 games, he's averaged over 30 points, 50% shooting from the field, 36, almost 37% from the three-point line, and over 36 minutes a game. Yesterday, and you guys may have heard this already, but if you have, you should be glad to hear it again. And if you haven't, open your ears, because some of this stuff that Kobe White is doing right now is really, really eye-opening and mind-blowing. When you think about the class that these performances are putting him in, the 37 points against Denver last night put him with Michael Jordan and 5 other players: Derrick Rose, Zach LaVine, DeMar DeRozan, Bob Love, and Chet Walker. Maybe the 6 greatest scorers in Bulls history, unless I'm missing somebody. Maybe the 6 greatest scorers, like pure scorers in Bulls history, as the only players to score 30 points in 3 straight games. The youngest player to have 3 straight 35-point games since Jordan did it in 1988. Think about that. We're watching Kobe White do things that only 6 other Bulls have done, and guys who hold a place in Bulls history, and that no one has done since Michael Jordan almost 30 years ago. And of course, he was named Eastern Conference Player of the Week for the 2nd consecutive week. This is the one I've heard a lot today. That makes him the first player since Michael Jordan to win the award in consecutive weeks, and the first player from the East since Joel Embiid in 2022-23. No one's done it for the Bulls since Jordan, and nobody has even done it in the Eastern Conference at all in 2 years. And then beyond Kobe White, I'm really enjoying watching Modest Puzelis do what he's doing, including the growing pains. I mean, Billy Donovan had him benched after the Sacramento game. For the second half of the Sacramento game and the following game, he had him benched, and then the morning of that Lakers game, he tells him, you're going to be guarding LeBron James. And what does he do? He goes out, and LeBron was coming off the injury, but Puzelis said after the game, I don't think LeBron even attempted one shot on me. And then on the offensive side, he goes for 31 on 12 of 18 shooting and 5 of 10 three-pointers in 30 minutes. And I really think you might have something special in Modest Puzelis. I'm not
I'm not getting as carried away with him as Kendall Gill, who I heard a few months ago say, we don't need Cooper Flagg. We already have a Cooper Flagg in Modest Puzelis. It's just going to take some time for him to grow in. I'm not going that crazy yet, but man, you might have something and somebody who could be part of like a big two or a big three for a real contender. And no, I'm not saying that this Bulls team is a real contender. But between Coby White and Puzelis and even Josh Giddey, who was two steals shy of a triple-double against the Lakers the other night, this is a fun team to watch. And the guy leading it all, who has... I already had a lot of respect for this guy before this stretch and what we've seen from the Bulls in the post-Zach LaVine era. But man, Billy Donovan is one hell of a basketball coach. And not just the X's and O's and going out there and drawing up the plays and getting guys where they need to be, but it would be real easy. It would be real easy for that team to sort of fold after the Zach LaVine trade and just go, well, I guess this is what we're doing. I guess we're trying to lose basketball games around here and looking towards the lottery and next year. I guess that's what this organization is looking to. And that can be defeating. That can be disheartening as an athlete, and that can spread through a locker room when your best player gets traded just a few months after your other best player in DeMar DeRozan was traded to the Sacramento Kings. So that could have easily spread throughout that locker room. And again, if I'm being real honest with you, I think a lot of you listening to me right now, and you can let me know at 312-644-6767, was maybe hoping that that happened a little bit and that they'd lose a few more games and work their way up the lottery ranks. But you got to give a ton of credit to Billy Donovan, man, for not just keeping those guys on track with what they were doing and keeping up with what they were doing, to take it to another level and to really, and this was something that Chuck Swirsky, the voice of the Bulls, and you can hear Bulls and Lakers tomorrow with Chuck and Bill on the call right here on 670 The Score and the Bulls Radio Network. Something he said the other day to me, which I think is probably the message that Billy Donovan spread throughout that locker room. When you trade your best player and your top scorer in a Zach LaVine, there's two ways you can look at that. Like I just said, it can be the beginning of the end and we're going to fold up here and call it a day, or guys can see it as an opportunity. And I think guys have seen it as an opportunity, specifically the three guys that I just mentioned in Coby, Puzelis, and Josh Giddey, guys who need the ball in their hands to do some things on the offensive side, whether it's to create their own shot or create shots for others. Those guys took it as a challenge and as an opportunity of, hey, now is our time to shine. Now we get center stage. Now we get the spotlight. And that's really some good coaching to get that out of those guys in this situation rather than the opposite. Even if we were all hoping for the opposite, you got to give Billy Donovan for getting that out of those guys, for driving those guys, and to, again, not just maintain what you were doing, but take it to another level. And so it's a bunch of guys that are doing a really good job. Obviously, you win 8 out of 10. But a group of guys that are really easy to root for, starting with Billy Donovan at the top, but then, man, Coby White, watching him just out on the court doing what he does and the smile that guy brings to the game, watching Puzelis as a young guy sort of find his legs at the NBA level, watching this whole team, Josh Giddey, do what he's doing. I even like Kevin Huerter. I spent some time in Sacramento at Sactown Sports out there, and he's a fun dude to watch and to root for and really has a great attitude when it comes to the sport of basketball. So, like I said, and I'm wondering if you feel the same way, at 312-644-6767, I find myself unexpectedly liking this Bulls team. And you know what? Now I'm fully in the boat of rooting for wins and seeing what we can do with this thing, because you're not moving up the lottery ranks anymore. I mean, quite frankly, if that was still a real possibility, I would probably still be rooting for that. Maybe I've just deluded myself into not rooting for that and going along with what they got going right now. But you look at the lottery standings, so to speak, And the Bulls are nowhere near moving into any real possibility of getting a top three, top four, or even a top seven pick. Where the percentages really jump is like around five. The fifth pick in the draft has almost a 10% chance to get the number one pick, and the Bulls are nine games away from that at the 11th spot right now, and a 2.5% chance to get the number one pick. So that's not happening. And with that not happening, and with this group of guys doing what they're doing, and as fun as they are, and as easy as they are to root for, I'm fully in on this Bulls team for the rest of this year. We can talk about long-term stuff. Like I said, I'm going to get into that in the 8 o'clock hour, but I'm fully on board with this Bulls team for the rest of this season. I'm wondering if you find them as likable and are as into it and rooting for them as hard as I am. Unexpectedly, quite frankly, 312-644-6767. And I'll take it one step further. And Tyler Buterbaugh on the other side of the glass, you alluded to this in some of our pre-show discussion. I think this is a team that, watching how they're playing now and looking at what Orlando is doing, Miami isn't even trying anymore at this point. They've lost 9 out of their last 10. They're trying desperately to let Toronto catch them in the standings, and it just ain't happening. Like, Miami is trying real, real hard to drop out of the play-in. So they're not even a problem or a concern once the play-in tournament starts. But at this point, I could legitimately see them catching Orlando for the eighth seed. And at that point, you just got to win one game. And we're talking playoff basketball in Chicago. Not play-in. We're talking playoff basketball. And what can the Bulls do as the seventh seed against the Boston Celtics? How much of a fight can they put up? But even if that doesn't happen, even if they stay at the ninth seed, and this was another thing Chuck Swirsky alluded to on Friday, they're going to take out the Heat. I have no doubt about that because, well, that's what the Heat want as much as that's what anybody else wants. And after that, you're going to take on the loser of Atlanta and Orlando. And the Bulls could beat either of those teams not just on a given night. I like the Bulls' chances against either of those teams. Atlanta's hot right now. They're winners of 7 of their last 10. But I like the Bulls' chances against either of those teams. And I think there's a pretty good chance, like 50-50 or better, especially if they get up to 8, that the Bulls are going to make it out of the play-in. If they can keep this up, and I think they can, there's at least a 50-50 chance or better that the Bulls are getting out of the play-in. And call me crazy, and again, I'm just talking about where they're at now and what I'm watching and how far it can get. They're not going to win a first-round series, whether it's against Boston or against Cleveland, if they end up in the 7 or the 8 seed. But a young team that doesn't know any better, plays hard, has a lot of energy, can run up and down the court, they could put up a fight and give us a fun series. Like a hard-fought 5 or 6 game exit. Which I'm here for, man. There's no way I would have thought I'd be saying this when the season started, but I'm here for it. I'm here for this Bulls team finishing strong. I'm here for them getting out of the play-in, and I'm here for them making a little bit of noise and putting up a little bit of fight against a Cavs team or a Celtics team in the playoffs. I think it would be fun, and I think this Bulls team is fun right now. Do you find yourself, like me, unexpectedly liking this Bulls team and enjoying this second half of the season post-Zach LaVine? 312-644-6767. I'd like to hear from you. If you want to shoot me a text, I'll read some of those, and I'll open the phone lines back up right after a short break, after which I will talk some Bears and some draft with Sam Monson of the 33rd team. He joins me, Rami Makhlouf, on the Score Evening Show right after this.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
Optimize your nutrition this year with Factor, America's number one ready-to-eat meal service. Factor's fresh, never-frozen meals are dietitian-approved, ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from 40 weekly options across 8 dietary preferences like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Eat smarter at factormeals.com/listen50 and use code LISTEN50 for 50% off plus free shipping on your first box. factormeals.com/listen50, code LISTEN50.
On my podcast, Aspire with Emma Greed, we share the keys to succeed in business and in life. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back live with more Rami Mekloff on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
And now after the fumble by Herbert, 30-yard line, Boise is going to set up shop. Give to Jenty, Ashton Jenty, breaks free.
Ashton Jenty going for 70 to the house on ESPN. This is Rami Mekloff with you on the Score Evening Show with you until 9 o'clock. Coming up at 7 o'clock, we'll talk with Sammy P of Bet Sweats on the MGM Network about some NCAA tournament. But another Sam joining me now on the Circa Sports Hotline, Circa Sports Illinois. Download the Circa Sports app today. My pleasure to welcome in Sam Monson from the 33rd Team and the Check the Mic podcast. Sam, always a pleasure, my man. How are you this evening?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. I do want to ask you about that guy who we just heard take it to the house for 70 yards. But first, before we get into draft stuff, let's talk about what has already happened. Are you as high as it seems a lot of people are on what the Bears have done in the offseason thus far throughout the free agency and trade period?
Yeah, I really like what they've done. Obviously, they had significant needs on that offensive line. And with Ben Johnson coming in, I mean, number one, that's a huge move in and of itself. This was a guy who'd been coveted for a few years now as one of the hot coaching properties and had elected to stay in Detroit and remain an offensive coordinator for a while. The Bears convince him, prize him away, and he becomes the head coach. Clearly has no interest in finding out if his system functions without an offensive line. So, you know, he's come from a system that put a ton of investment and a ton of resources and a ton of stock in having a very good offensive line. And the Lions over the last few years have had, you know, a top two offensive line in the league. I don't know that the Bears are going to get there this year, but they've done serious work to make that group an awful lot better than it was last season. And that was their biggest need. So they've kind of done two things, you know, with one set of moves. They've massively upgraded the line and taken away most of their major needs as they roll towards the draft.
And I do like what they've done on the offensive side in the trenches. And I won't say I don't like what they did on the defensive side in the trenches. I just have more questions about it. When you talk about Grady Jackson, first of all, top-rate dude and great locker room guy and culture guy. So I know he's going to bring that to the table. But at his age, less than 2 years away from a torn ACL, and you look at his last 2 years of production, not great, especially when it comes to getting after quarterbacks. And then the edge rusher they got, Dio Odengbo, lots of potential there and all the tools and measurables that you'd look for, Sam, but not a lot of production to show for it. Again, when it comes to getting after quarterbacks, what did you think of those two moves and the Bears' investment on that side of the line?
Yeah, definitely a little bit less spectacular. Grady Jarrett at his best has been, you know, one of the best pass rushing defensive tackles in the game, but you're right. He hasn't been at that level for a while now. It's a difficult one because it's been a few years since we've seen that kind of play from him. On the other hand, you know, he's not that old for a defensive tackle. I mean, a lot of these guys have been playing their best football kind of deep into their careers and well over the age of 30. You know, Jarrett doesn't have that many miles on the clock relative to some of those types of defensive tackles. So, you know, there's a chance that he could get back to that level of play again, or at least sort of bridge the gap between where he's been the last couple of years and his very best peak play. It's a lot of money for that kind of gamble, so I understand being a little bit leery about it. But I think those are two solid moves to just add talent to a defensive line that's pretty good by itself. Clearly needed, you know, just some more work, some more bodies to the rotation. But I think they still like the potential of a lot of young players on that line.
Talking with Sam Monson of the 33rd team, and check out the Check the Mic podcast with him and Steve Palazzolo. Now that we've gotten through that, let's get to what's coming up and how what we just talked about plays into what the Bears might do coming into the offseason. And as you pointed out, they had clear and glaring weaknesses on both sides of the line. They addressed those. So now is it best player available on the board at that point, Sam? Or do you think there are still holes to fill on either line, or maybe just some depth to fill on one of those lines?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's still some potential gaps to fill on the roster overall. But I do think they freed themselves up to be a lot more open to just playing the way the draft falls, you know, going best player available and taking advantage of the right kind of draft and the right kind of player if he's available. You know, if they hadn't done that, I think they would have been basically boxed into a corner and need to spend those premium picks at these kind of spots along the trenches that they've already filled. So, you know, to me, that's what the purpose of free agency is. It's kicking off those glaring weaknesses, filling those massive holes so that you can be a lot more flexible in the draft. And if the right player comes along, you know, you can take him and not have to force needs.
That being said, the guy who we just heard the highlight of coming out of the break, taking it to the house for 70 yards. If an Ashton Jeanty is there at 10, I've heard scouts say he's the best running back prospect to come out in the last 5 years or 7 years, and one of those difference makers on the field. Do you see him at that level? Is that a guy that you got to take if he's there at number 10?
I do think that he's a special talent. I do think he's a special prospect. You know, you could make the case that he's the best running back prospect to come along since Adrian Peterson. That's going back all the way to, 07. Wow. But, you know, the guys that would be in that conversation, it's Saquon Barkley, it's Bijan Robinson. You know, he's in that kind of category. However you want to order those guys, he's one of the best prospects to come along in the last, you know, 15 years. And those guys are capable of changing the complexion of a team. I don't think they're capable of creating a running game where one can't exist. You know, the blocking still needs to be there. The offensive line needs to be in a reasonable shape. But now Chicago have done that. They put the offensive line in good order. So I think a guy like Jeanty could come in right now and do what Jeanty's been able to do in college in a way that might not have been true before they had done real work to that offensive line. So, you know, if they hadn't fixed that group and they were talking about drafting Jeanty at 10 overall, I would think that that's not a great idea. But now with those, you know, two or three additions to that offensive line, I think it's a much more defendable position and the kind of impact that could be difference-making.
Talking with Sam Monson of the 33rd team in the Check the Mic podcast here on the Score Evening Show for a few more minutes. The other skill position player, and then we'll get into some of the guys in the trenches who some have going to the Bears in these mock drafts. But the other skill position guy I'm intrigued by, and I've heard lots of Bears fans and people around here talking about, is the tight end Tyler Warren out of Penn State. Is he another one of those sort of game changer, difference makers type of guys that you maybe have to take if he's on the board at 10?
Yeah, definitely a guy that has that kind of playmaking potential. I mean, every time you watch Penn State games, Tyler Warren jumped out and was clearly the best player on the field on offense for that team. He's a difference maker at that tight end position. If they came out of it with, like, either both of those guys, Jeanty and Tyler Warren, running back and tight end right now in today's NFL, they're the sort of lower value positions that teams tend to wait on and tend to allow, you know, to be picked up later in the draft. But both of those guys, I think, can have that kind of difference-making impact despite those lower value positions. And, you know, certainly the Lions, where Ben Johnson came from, they showed they didn't really care about position value, you know, those lower value positions. If they thought they had a difference making player, they were going to draft that guy regardless of how high it was, whether it's Jahmyr Gibbs at 12 overall, I think they got him. You know, Sam LaPorta was in the second round. They were perfectly prepared to grab those guys high in the draft if they thought they could make an impact. So I think both Jeanty or Tyler Warren would transform this offense.
Let me put you in Ryan Poles' shoes for a second, and somehow we get to pick number 10, and Jeanty and Warren are on the board. Which way you going, Sam Monson?
I would take Jeanty because I think he is more special relative to, you know, what you tend to find in a given year. Like, there are a lot of people out there this year that I think have Colson Loveland, the Michigan tight end, in the same kind of area as Tyler Warren. He's not as special, say, as Brock Bowers was a year ago. Whereas Jeanty, we talked about, I mean, he might be the most special guy to come along in the last 15 years. He's certainly in that kind of category. I think that's a rarer guy to find at the top of the draft.
Is this a more unpredictable draft than we've seen in recent years, Sam? Because I can't really get a handle on what teams think about the two quarterbacks that are projected to go in the top 10. I feel like we hear very differing opinions on both those guys, and Cam Ward and Shedeur Sanders, depending on what day and what network you might turn on or what website you may go click on. Nobody's really sure what side of the ball Travis Hunter is going to play on or if he's going to do both. I've seen Abdul Carter slide down in some mock drafts, as well as Mason Graham, the defensive tackle from Michigan. Is this a hard draft for you to peg this year in terms of who's going to land where?
Yeah, I mean, I think there seems to be a growing consensus that Cam Ward will be the number one pick and that number one is kind of set in stone. I think Shedeur Sanders is very polarizing. I think there's a lot of opinions on him. And now those teams that are picking at the top of the draft are starting to kind of maybe take themselves out of the quarterback running. The Giants have now signed two veteran quarterbacks, albeit on short-term deals. You know, they might not be selecting Shedeur Sanders at the top of the draft. The Browns desperately need a way out of this Deshaun Watson mess, and Sanders would be that answer, but it would involve passing on, you know, an Abdul Carter at the top of the draft, so they might not be into it. And if that happens, I don't think anybody knows where Sanders is going to go and how far down that first round he will slide. And then so many of the kind of classic blue-chip players in this draft have got some kind of red flag that would scare teams. Even a guy like Abdul Carter, who, you know, is seen by many as like the best player in this draft, I mean, he only moved to edge rusher a year ago. He's basically got 1 year of play at the position that you're projecting him to the next level. He was a linebacker. He did the Micah Parsons conversion, but in college. So many of these guys, I think, are not quite the kind of surefire, you know, clean prospect with no flaws that you do see at the top of the draft most years.
Do you think it's possible that, and I want to ask you about two guys on the defensive side and then two guys on the offensive side, that either Graham or Abdul Carter somehow slipped to the Bears at 10? Is this draft this unpredictable?
I would be very shocked if Abdul Carter slid that far. I think there are too many teams in the edge rusher market that would pounce on him if he got out of the first few picks. I think the chances are he's going in the top four. If he somehow made it past that, I think there's enough teams that would grab him in the sort of the rest of the top 10 that I just don't really see a way he slides that far. Mason Graham, I think he probably goes 5 to Jacksonville, but if he somehow got by Jacksonville, I think there is a chance that he could go on a little mini slide. And, you know, again, you can make a case that Mason Graham is like the best player in this draft, but those measurables were way away from the kind of ideal numbers that people would have wanted to see. His arms are short relative to that position. He came in 25 pounds under what he was listed at Michigan. And that, I don't think he was ever anywhere near that late weight, but he 296 is barely undersized for a guy like Mason Graham. So I could see a world where maybe enough teams are turned off by the lack of kind of prototypical measurements that he goes on a little mini slide and could potentially be available, you know, maybe at 10, maybe they might have to trade up a pick or two to get him.
And then on the offensive side, talking with Sam Monson of the 33rd team and the Check the Mic podcast, you just mentioned short arms. Is that why Will Campbell is sliding down some draft boards that I've seen? And could he be there at 10? And what do you think he is at the left lane at the next level, even with those relatively short arms for a tackle in the NFL?
Yeah, it's the combination. It's the short arms and the even smaller wingspan, which is actually, I mean, his arms are extremely short for an offensive tackle, but his wingspan, if he played left tackle in the NFL, he would have the smallest wingspan of basically any tackle on record, any tackle that's been, you know, put through those measurements. So he is an extremely unusual body shape for a left tackle. And I think in most people's books, he immediately became a guard the second he put those measurements out there. And it was kind of the exact magnitude of the situation was known. And I think that puts his draft stock in jeopardy. Like, I would have said if he was a clear left tackle, if there were no questions there, he would be nailed on to go number four overall to the Patriots because they need a left tackle. But I don't know if teams are going to see him that way. In fact, I would say most teams are not going to see him that way. At that point, you start to ask the question, you know, how high can we draft a guard? And that's always been a sticking point for teams. And I don't think even as a guard, his tape would be as clean, as special, you know, as somebody like Quentin Nelson, who went, I think, at six overall when he came out. So, yeah, I think if teams view Will Campbell as a guard, he could be sliding maybe even beyond the top 10 into the teens somewhere.
Has he slid below Armon Membo, the offensive tackle out of Missouri, on pretty much all draft boards, do you think, Sam?
Maybe not on all, but probably on a lot because of Membo's going to be seen as a tackle. And even he is getting some. It's such a strange draft class because all of the top tackle prospects somewhere are being talked about as guards. I don't remember a draft class where that's been the case. But even Membo has been getting some, you know, maybe he's a guard at the next level of talk. But I think most people will see Membo as a tackle, and the tackle-needy teams will push him higher in the draft. So, yeah, I think he could easily have jumped Will Campbell at this point just because they're now seen as different positions.
He is the NFL analyst for the 33rd team. Also, check out the Check the Mic podcast and follow him on Twitter at Sam Monson NFL for some good football talk. Sam, always appreciate the time and the insight, man. I'm sure we'll talk again soon.
Anytime, guys. Take it easy.
And he joins me on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, Circa Las Vegas. .com. It's always cool. I don't know why. I've always gotten a kick out of it talking NFL football with a guy with an Irish accent. And you might not have picked up on it, some of you out there, because it's gotten better over the years. I've been talking football with Sam for a long time, like maybe almost 10 years now. And it used to be thicker, and I like it. I don't know why. It's just something different. You don't hear a lot of guys with an Irish accent talking American football. Usually they're talking about football. And I enjoy it. So I appreciate Sam for his insight and his accent. We'll hit a quick break on the other side. Couple of moves in the NFL. Sam touched on them right there. He didn't tell you what it was, but he touched on one of them right there in our discussion. A couple of significant names moving around the NFL. And I have a conspiracy theory about another name who may be on the move in the NFL. That's all coming up next. Rami Makhlouf on the Score Evening Show right here on Chicago Sports Radio 670. The Score.
Mr. Unlimited. Unlimited.
We're back live with more Rami Makhlouf on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
That's me with you until 9 o'clock, and coming up at 7, I'll talk some NCAA tourney with Sammy P from Bet Sweats on the BetMGM network. He's coming up at the top of the hour. Couple of pieces of breaking NFL news since we've been on the air. Yes, Mr. Unlimited has a new home. I'll get to that in just 1 second, but this happened during the break. Am I right about that, Tyler? No, okay. It happened earlier in the... I'm looking at the tweet from Adam Schefter, and I just didn't see it until during the break, but Adam Schefter reporting that free agent wide receiver Stephon Diggs reached agreement on a 3-year, $69 million deal, including $26 million guaranteed with the New England Patriots. Man, I've been a Stephon Diggs guy for a long time. I spent a little bit of time in Minneapolis when he was still with the Vikings and saw what he could do up close and personal, and watching like every minute of those games, you know, doing what I do for a living. And I thought he was really underrated and underappreciated in this league, but now he's 31 years old and coming off a torn ACL. And I don't love that signing. And also I just don't see how it makes sense for that Patriots team, that they seem to be okay with the fact that they're not quite ready to win just yet. At least that's, I picked that up in Mike Vrabel's introductory press conference, that they're going to have some patience and sort of build this thing around Drake May. And you go get him a 31-year-old wide receiver coming off a torn ACL. That didn't make a whole lot of sense to me, but good for Stephon Diggs. I like that dude, and I'm glad he got his money. So however it works out, happy for Stephon Diggs. But the move that really caught my attention, and I think is going to get a lot of people's attention this year, is that dude, Mr. Unlimited, who you heard coming out of the break. Russell Wilson signs a one-year deal worth up to $21 million, including $10.5 million guaranteed. Not as risky as the Stephon Diggs contract that I just talked about. It's 1 year. You might end up only paying him $10.5 million, or if it goes well, you're going to end up paying him $21 million. Here's a prediction. It will not go well. It will not go well in New York for Russell Wilson and the Giants. That's just a train wreck of an organization. And I'll be totally honest, upfront and transparent with you. Brian Daboll was on my short list when the Bears hired Matt Eberflus. He does not look like it. He does not look like the answer as a head coach or as an offensive play caller from what we've seen here in the first few years. And the answer to fix that, they think, is Russell Wilson.
Unlimited.
And just imagine how Russell Wilson's corny-ass act is going to play in the city of New York, of all places. Just imagine how that crap that you just heard right there, that Mr. Unlimited, all that hokey, cheesy stuff that Russell Wilson is known for in New York, dude, he better play well, because that is not going to fly in New York City if he is not playing well. They'll be okay with it if they're winning, but if it does not go well, and that's what he's putting out there, it's going to be a problem. But here's what's really, really interesting to me about Russell Wilson to the Giants. If you didn't hear, a few days ago, they signed Jameis Winston. And before that, the only quarterback that they had rostered was the Italian stallion, Tommy DeVito, who is a fan favorite, especially in the Italian community out there in New York, which is sizable, in case you haven't heard, the Italian community in New York and New Jersey. I predict we'll see all three of those guys next year. First, Russell Wilson will be bad, and New York fans will get really sick of his corny ass real fast, and he'll be benched. Jameis Winston will come in, and people will love him because he's the opposite of Russell Wilson. He's like genuinely, he's got more of a genuine persona and attitude that people tend to like and have fun with when he's eating W's and doing all that dumb crap. But then they'll get sick of him because he's just not good at quarterback. And then we'll see Tommy DeVito at some point, and people will love that for some reason. But it's going to be fun watching the New York Giants quarterback situation this year with those three personalities and the reaction that they tend to get from fan bases in New York. It's going to be a lot of fun watching that quarterback situation this year, and we will see all three of them, in my opinion. That's my bold prediction for the show this evening, and quite frankly, I don't think it's that bold. This, what I'm about to drop on you, a little bit bold. So now the quarterback carousel has pretty much stopped. I think everybody is in place. We're kind of just waiting for Aaron Rodgers, as we find ourselves doing in NFL off seasons. We're just waiting for Aaron Rodgers to say he's going to be a Steeler. There's nowhere left for him to go right now other than to be a Steeler. And I came across this clip today from the Up in Adams program with Kay Adams. And she was talking to J.J. McCarthy, the Vikings going on second year quarterback, who was taken in the first round last year. And with the news that they were moving on from their pursuit or interest in Aaron Rodgers, quote, for now, everybody assumed J.J. McCarthy is going to be the starter in Minnesota, right? Well, to hear J.J. McCarthy tell it, he hasn't been told that himself quite yet.
We found out, you know, a lot of buzz was being made about Aaron Rodgers. He might be coming there. He's interested. Of course he would be. It's such a great situation. So I feel like we as a fan base or even media found out, like, you're the guy, the guy, recently. When did you know? When did they tell you, or when was that message to you?
They haven't told me, and I'm happy they didn't, because I try to earn it every single day, and I never want that to be given to me, and it's such a privilege and opportunity to give me that chance, and I'm just going to make the most of it every single day.
So they haven't told him he's the starter yet, and it might just be, we're going to make you earn it, kid, before we crown you. You know, that might be all that's going on here, but I heard another rumor today that Kirk Cousins is waiting till after the draft before he waives his no-trade clause with the Atlanta Falcons after he lost his job to Michael Penix last year. Call me crazy. Tyler, just turn off my microphone if this conspiracy theory is just too crazy. All right, just turn it off and hit the break. All right?
I'm ready.
Okay. Do you think maybe the Vikings are sitting there and maybe through back channels saying to Kirk Cousins, hey, man, you were pretty good here, and we liked you, and you liked us. We just couldn't come to terms on a contract. We didn't want to pay you all that money that you wanted, and you went somewhere where they would pay you all that money that you wanted. But now that you got that money, and so much of it is guaranteed, and we'll only have to pick up a small portion of that, we want you to be our quarterback for a year. And you know what? If in that year where you can come here, where you know the system, you know the players, you've put up big numbers, it's the best place for you to go and show the rest of the NFL that you still got it. And if in that year we really like what we see from you, or we really don't like what we see from J.J. McCarthy, or a little bit of both, maybe we can work out something long-term and reunite, and you can finish out your career as a Minnesota Viking, a place you and your family liked a lot and where you've had a lot of success. Is that crazy, Tyler? Is that crazy to think that might play out that way?
I can't disagree. I can't disagree. That's too crazy. Because, I mean, it could make complete sense. He's already starting the Brett Favre path, and this will just top it off.
It makes sense to me for all parties involved, because neither of them wanted a divorce when they divorced. They loved Kirk Cousins in Minnesota, and he loved being there. They just couldn't come to terms on a contract. Both sides had nothing but glowing things to say to each other, and not just like the run-of-the-mill type of things that you say when a free agent leaves after a good run with your team. No, they went out of their way, both parties, Kirk Cousins and his camp, and the Vikings went out of their way to talk about how much they liked each other and how they just couldn't come to terms on something. If that's the case, and the Falcons are footing the bill, and you're not sold on J.J. McCarthy, why not, dude? It makes all the sense in the world to me for everyone involved. But we'll see. We're going to have to wait till after the draft to see what Kirk Cousins and maybe what the Vikings are doing. Switch gears, talk some NCAA tournament. Sammy P. of Bet Sweats on the BetMGM Network joins me, Rami Makhlouf, right after this on the Score Evening Show.